CM Punk has his first UFC fight day. What will become of Roman Reigns' suspension? What does that mean for pro wrestling wellness policy violations in the first place? That and much, much more to discuss in the next hour. This is Brains to Wrestling. I am Hammy, and joining me on Skype, hopefully for the last time, and he'll be back next week in studio, is Michael Hipster Punchy Falcone. Mike, are you there? And how are you, sir?
I'm here. I'm doing pretty well.
Good. Your audio's not shitty tonight. That's excellent. First off, let's just get right out of the gate right here. CM Punk has his first UFC fight. He is fighting at UFC 203 against Mickey Gall, who has only 2-0 in his professional career. CM Punk 0-0. The rumors are, well, not rumors, there's basically facts now. CM Punk has had 14 to 15 practice fights in his training, and he all lost except one of them. So it's not really looking good for CM Punk's UFC debut.
Yeah, it's pretty much a payday for CM Punk at this point. He's going to play mixed martial artists. He'll get some money, get them some buy rates, and then cut out.
You think that's what's going to happen there? He's going to be one and done?
Maybe not one and done, like two or three.
So let's break this story down for people who, just to summarize what's going on here. Phil CM Punk Brooks was one of the faces of WWE for years. He was what would be the best comparison? He's basically the catalyst of why a lot of people, ourselves included, got back full time into pro wrestling, specifically WWE.
Not only that, but he knocked down the door for a lot of the talents who are there now.
Absolutely. He was one of the biggest voices for the back. He was one of the biggest voices for the fans that were frustrated with the product. He was the true voice of the voiceless.
Yeah. Without CM Punk doing well in 2011, we don't get Kevin Owens. We don't get Sami Zayn. We probably don't get AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, and many other people like getting signed, let alone being big fixtures on WWE programming.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of what we have now if not for CM Punk. So for that, CM Punk actually did do what he said he was going to do, and that's make some changes in WWE for the better part of the next generation.
Granted, he wasn't around for a lot of it.
No, but he was one of the catalysts of what's happening now in WWE, I think.
Yeah, exactly. He was the catalyst. And notice that a lot of the guys they're getting from the indies, they're more CM Punk in style and not as much Daniel Bryan.
Right. CM Punk was that one person that came through and paved the way for guys like Daniel Bryan to get over. I mean, before CM Punk, you had John Cena, Batista, and Randy Orton. Those were the three people that were just clogging your TV screens with the same boring, used up storylines over and over again. And then CM Punk came in, he did his thing, and then that paved the way for Daniel Bryan, which I'm willing to bet right now, if it wasn't for CM Punk, Daniel Bryan's miracle on Bourbon Street at WrestleMania 30 would never have happened.
No, not at all. And to be honest, I think that was their plan all along, was having Daniel Bryan win the title at WrestleMania 30. They were just trying to make sympathy happen and put lightning in a bottle, which ended up working wonderfully for them.
You know what I think WWE made the mistake of is not wanting Daniel Bryan at first, and then SummerSlam came around, and then that Monday Night Raw where Bryan was with the Wyatt family for all of a couple of weeks, and the fans were crapping all over that plan.
And oh, then
that,
they were.
That Monday Night Raw, where he sat on top of that cage and did the yes thing, that was the loudest yes chant I've ever heard. And no one in the back doubted Daniel Bryan after that. I think that moment right there was what pushed Daniel Bryan into the main event storyline for WrestleMania 30. But this is not about Daniel Bryan. This is about CM Punk. And what happened with Punk is he took his bags and went home. He walked out of WWE, and as we heard on Colt Cabana's podcast I don't blame him for doing it. I don't blame him for doing what he did. I don't blame him for being frustrated, fed up, and feeling like that, like, not only was his life in danger, but just the overall feel of him just being disrespected behind the scenes. I don't blame him. I really don't blame him for leaving. So, but where did he go after this? Well, it wasn't all that long until after he packed his bags and left WWE that Dana White offered him what can only be assumed as is a lot of money to fight for the UFC. So here's CM Punk. He's in his mid-30s. He goes from wrestling full-time for the better part of basically half of his life to now being a rookie in the UFC, learning how to abuse his body in a much different way now. And we've had setbacks, delays. He's had to get surgery after surgery, and he's had countless delays with his debut, which should have been far long ago at this point. But now we finally have a date for CM Punk, UFC 203 versus Mickey Gall. And the big debate about this between MMA fans and WWE fans, because let's be honest here, guys, and Mike, there are there are elitist fans in both MMA and pro wrestling. We get these snobby fans in every sport. NFL, that there are more than enough snobby NFL fans, and a lot of NFL teams are known to be the snobby fans of the NFL. MMA and pro wrestling all have their elitist, like, not in my backyard fans, kind of, because pro wrestling fans, when especially WCW fans, whenever they had a new celebrity come out and were actually in a match, like Jay Leno when he wrestled in WCW and he put Hulk Hogan in a sleeper hold, everyone was like, come on, really? Like, he doesn't belong here. Why the hell is he here? That same mentality now is with MMA fans with CM Punk. And MMA fans everywhere are saying he's A, not even going to make it to the octagon, B, he's going to get his ass kicked, and three, if he somehow pulls off the win, it's going to be one and done. His body's not going to be able to handle it. So, Mike, what are your thoughts about CM Punk now finally having a date, UFC 203 versus Mickey Gall?
And oddly enough, in this city where he quit WWE, I think that was on purpose. I honestly am not expecting him to win, but it was cool they're kind of feeding him an inexperienced opponent, because you kind of need to do that. He didn't have like the amateur wrestling background like a Brock Lesnar, which is kind of easy to transition to the current MMA rules. So it's good that they're kind of feeding him an opponent who's got similar actual match experience. But I don't think he's going to be in MMA that long.
Well, here's the thing. Mickey Gall has been training for the better part of his whole adult life to be a UFC fighter. He's been training to be a mixed martial artist. He has, I think, a brown belt in jiu-jitsu. I'm pretty sure I could be totally wrong here. But he has professional training. Now, I'm not saying CM Punk hasn't had professional training. He absolutely has. And he's been said to have been training jiu-jitsu. But what is his professional resume with MMA aside from this is a total publicity stunt from Dana White and the UFC?
Hey, and you know what? Dana White's not afraid to do that publicity stunt. Look at the money Brock Lesnar's generated for them.
I'm not saying that it's not a smart business move. I'm not saying it's not going to get a bunch of fans to watch, because it absolutely is.
Yeah.
There are going to be people, both MMA fans and WWE fans, who either want to watch him and hope he succeeds or want to watch him and hope he gets his ass kicked. Either way, Dana White is getting your $50-plus dollars for UFC 203.
Yeah, and people are going to pay. Honestly, I don't think Punk's winning that match. But a lot of wrestling fans are going to be shelling out money for that or getting the discounted stream on some Russian websites.
Right.
But either way, it's going to be one of the more watched episode UFC cards. It might even top Lesnar's first match numbers just because of how popular CM Punk was in wrestling. And also how hated he was, too. Like, there'll be people buying it hoping he wins and people buying it hoping it's knocked out or submitted.
So the reason why we are focusing on CM Punk, at least for the first part of the show tonight, is he was on Colin Coward's show today, and he had this to say with regards to the fans talking about him, and what if he somehow pulls this off? This is his response to Colin Coward's question.
I know people think, you know, this is a publicity stunt. I'm never going to step foot in the octagon. I look forward to proving them wrong. But to me, it's not super far-fetched to be like, well, you know what? What if I put 3 or 4 wins together? Who's to say I don't get a title shot? No, I'm a very positive thinking person. No, of course I'm not going to saddle myself with this negativity that, that's it. That's it for me. Because to me in life, it's so cliche and it sounds so corny and it's Karate Kid-like, but it's not about you getting knocked down. It's about how many times you get up, you know, and that's why I train the way I do. I get knocked down in training every day. So on September 10th, I won't get knocked down. But, you know, to wrestling fans who say, oh, this is BS, and, you know, the ones that say I'm going to fight one time are the same ones that are now saying that I'm never going to make it to the octagon. And, you know, that's for them to say. They're entitled to their opinion, but I'll prove them all wrong.
I have a big problem with one sentence in that whole response, and that's I don't find it that far-fetched to want a title shot if he pulls off 3 or 4 wins in a row.
After 3 or 4 wins is when Dana White's going to up the competition, not when you're going to get a title shot.
No, because there's a beautiful thing in every single sport called paying your dues. The only sport, if you even want to call it sport out there, that doesn't involve paying dues if you're in just based on your sheer popularity is professional wrestling. And now before the fans, you know, shit on me for saying this, there are thousands of pro wrestlers who work in the indies and never make it to the big leagues. And let's be honest, the big leagues is WWE. Even if you make it to NXT, you have made it to the big show. There are thousands of wrestlers who never even get noticed. So they pay their dues throughout their whole career. But there are people in WWE who pay their dues in NXT, are called up to the main roster, and are given that chance to shine just based on your popularity. Your in-ring performances in pro wrestling, honestly, don't matter. It's about how much you can get over with the fans. And if the promoter can sense that you're going to make them a lot of money, they're going to give you whatever you want. Even if you can't wrestle, look at Hulk Hogan. He can.
I mean, let's be honest, though. Even being popular is not always the best way to get pushed. Look at Damian Sandow. He was massively popular, especially during his Mizdow stuff, and they just cut him at the knees.
And it also goes down to what the promoter wants from you. If you can't give the promoter what he wants, the promoter's not going to use you. And this goes with every single wrestling promotion out there. But if we were to make a rule based on, like, you have to be the most amazing in-ring competitor ever to actually make it in pro wrestling,
I mean, Cesaro's on his third WWE title push.
Then Cesaro's the face of pro wrestling.
But Kevin Owens is the top heel ever in wrestling.
Right.
And
there are more than just your athletic abilities to become a successful pro wrestler. And CM Punk had all of those credentials. I mean, he was excellent on the mic. He could trash talk. He can get over both as a face and as a heel. And he was great in the ring. So he had the whole package, except the physical appearance of what Vince McMahon wanted as a top star. He didn't have the body.
And so, it was tough sledding from there. And I feel like if CM Punk had signed with WWE now, as opposed to when he did, I think he'd have been elevated much higher than he was, and he wouldn't have had to deal with Triple H the wrestler, because Triple H would already be semi-retired. So he'd probably have worked a lot better with Triple H.
Yeah, and Triple H, the wrestler, was probably not the best person to work with, because when you're a wrestler, you want to scratch and claw your way to hold your spot on the card. It's fine to admit it, but now that Triple H is basically all but retired from in-ring competition, Triple H as a behind-the-scenes force and basically promoter and manager, I mean, look what he does with NXT. Triple H knows how to give the fans what they want. I will defend that opinion until the day I die, folks. Triple H is the rightful heir to run WWE when Vince McMahon eventually hangs it up.
He is. Maybe him and Shane should run it and let Stephanie kind of have the Divas Women's Division be her baby. Maybe make it, like I said, maybe make it a team effort.
I wouldn't complain about that, but see, here's the thing. Here's a big question. Does CM Punk deserve his shot at UFC on a official UFC pay-per-view? Like, this isn't on Fight Pass or anything. This isn't even on UFC on Fox Sports. This is UFC 203 on the main card. This would be like if a newly signed WWE wrestler gets to debut at the Royal Rumble, for instance, or Survivor Series. This would be like AJ Styles. The only difference is AJ Styles has a career of pro wrestling and absolutely deserves the immediate push to the spotlight. CM Punk has no fighting experience aside from a couple warm-up fights that he all but one lost, has no previous fighting experience aside from his training, and the only qualification he has is he's a good shit talker, which he hasn't been doing a lot of. If you notice, because I think CM Punk realized, oh shit, this is so much harder than I thought that it was going to be.
And Butt Monkey's got a couple of questions. I'll answer. They actually taped the first episode of the Cruiserweight Classic, or the first couple episodes, at Full Sail. There's some really good matches on there, and the cast for that's really good. Once they start airing episodes of that, we'll start discussing that a little more frequently, because obviously we don't want to spoil the results of that, because that's going to be a fantastic show for WWE Network.
And to his response, all but retired, you know he'll insert himself again, referring to what I said about Triple H. Yes, yeah. He absolutely will, but he's not a full-time competitor anymore. He's not involved in the major storylines everywhere again. He's going to wrestle at WrestleMania. He's going to be like Taker.
Yeah. I'm gonna shift gears story-wise. I didn't put this on the prep because I just remembered this. Since it was recently Father's Day, so Chris Jericho on his podcast had the sister of the late Nancy Benoit on his podcast.
Oh boy.
And they went in to talk about like Chris Benoit leading up to the murder-suicide. And there were a couple interesting points on there. She previously said her sister was brutalized as a direct result of Chris's roid rage. But she also didn't discount concussions playing a role in his mental state at the time leading up to the double murder-suicide. She also feels that Benoit losing a series of close friends and neighbors in years before the incident took a toll on him. So she talked about how close Benoit was with Eddie Guerrero, Ray Traylor, and Johnny Grunge especially. Also that she feels the pressure got to Benoit after winning the title at WrestleMania 20, and that he became increasingly paranoid as he became more famous.
As far as Eddie Guerrero having a hand in on his eventual snap, you can look at the video yourself. Look at how hysterical Benoit got during his tribute to Eddie Guerrero when Guerrero died. Like, I saw that, I'm like, oh my god, this guy, he's going to snap at one way or another, and just all the ingredients came together and just created the explosion that was that horrific tragedy.
Now this next thing I'm going to say, it's the big thing. Like, this dispels a lot that was said during the aftermath of this. She revealed several details that hadn't been mentioned before in the press. She noted that prior to the murders, Chris Benoit had done a Google search on the easiest way to break someone's neck, and that Nancy had gotten a restraining order on him at one point. So
shit.
That kind of like the whole, oh, he just snapped and it happened, that kind of does away with that because he had done a Google search on how to do the job.
Holy shit.
She says the media reports that the son had Fragile X syndrome were false and he was healthy. On the subject of Benoit reportedly having the brain of an 80-year-old Alzheimer's patient, she also says he functioned fine in the sense that he could navigate roads and airports. She clarified a few other things here. The timeline clarified that Chris killed Nancy on the Friday, then the son the following day on a Saturday, and then himself on that Sunday night by rigging the pull-down machine on the gym to take his own life. And then she said they were actually before all that went down, she also says Benoit and his wife were planning on his retirement after wrestling, and he was going to actually open a wrestling school in Atlanta.
That's so unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
So, again, that... And, again, it's a reliable source. I mean, obviously, she would have been privy to a lot of those details, being the sister of one of the victims.
Holy shit.
Yeah. That's rough to think about. But, like, I remember, like, that was a huge... Because the huge story. And that Benoit thing is key, because that... A direct result of that is why they went to the PG era to get away from that.
And why they have the wellness policy.
Yep. Well, that and Eddie Guerrero is why they have the wellness policy, let's be honest.
Well, yeah, of course, but what's the word I'm looking for here, Punchy? Their main drive and their main motivation to have the wellness policy and their... like obsession with safety of their performers, Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit.
Yeah,
those two are the reasons why WWE. I mean, you want to blame WWE for not having chair shots to the head anymore? You want to yell at WWE for not having violent matches? You want to blame WWE for stopping matches mid match for concussion issues and any other injuries that they would have ignored back then? Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit, those two are the reason why WWE is the way they are today. And I don't blame them for doing it. But at the same time, I also got to think, you know, these wrestlers got to WWE for doing the things that they were doing that WWE is now banning. So, I mean, it's I don't know where to go from this. I don't know what I would do, but... Because on one hand, I want my performers to be able to do what they can do and do it safely. But at the same time, I need to look out for their careers. I need to look out for their well-beings. And also, selfishly thinking here, I'm paying them a lot of money. And I don't want them to injure themselves and me still have to pay them. So I can see why WWE is doing what they're doing. I don't necessarily agree 100% with why they're doing it. But I understand. Speaking of wellness policies, we could transition from that to what's really going on now with one of the faces of WWE, Roman Reigns.
Yeah, him getting suspended. They still didn't say what he got suspended for yet.
My guess is it was probably a joint. He was probably lighting up a joint with RVD.
No, that would come out. I mean, that would come out right away.
Oh, so you think it was a PED?
I think it was something. I think it was not even that, not even blatant PED use. I think it was just he took a supplement that had something that he didn't know was in there, and that was that.
So you think it was accidental?
Yeah, I don't think it was. I don't think it was on purpose. I think it was an accidental. But he should have been more careful with it, which he should be more careful with it. Especially with the fact that they've got a very strict wellness policy. Even like people like ESPN have been saying WWE has the best drug policy.
I don't think they have the best drug policy.
I think
WWE has one of the worst disciplinary policies for wellness policies. I think that they're horrendous, which leads to this topic. That we talked about earlier, Mike, before the show. How ridiculous is WWE's wellness policy, where one of the faces of the company, Roman Reigns, is still in the main event picture while he's suspended.
Yeah, that is ridiculous. I mean, he's still in the world title picture. They can't really change that match. They booked it. He won't win the match.
Sure they can. This is all professional wrestling. Is an act. It's all this. It's a whole show. It's a scripted show with athletic people performing for you. It absolutely is sports entertainment. You have people who are athletic who put on a show for you. This is basically if stuntmen learned how to talk on a microphone. That's what this is.
Okay, then what I'll say is they won't change it.
Okay, thank you. That's better. They will not change this because rumor mill, Vince McMahon is trying to book Roman Reigns to have a strong comeback redemption story when he returns, to which I say, P.U., disgusting.
Butt Monkey thinks it's a work, by the way.
I mean, knowing WWE, I think the initial getting caught and being suspended, that's absolutely real. But why not use it as part of a storyline? We're in the age of the internet. Everyone finds out eventually.
If it's a work, it's not going to do Reigns any favors. The fans aren't going to suddenly be behind him as a redemption story. They're still going to shit on him. Like, he's not getting suddenly popular because it'll give the Roman Reigns haters even more fuel for the fire.
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. Roman Reigns is not going to return as a face. In the eyes of the fans, he's not. The fans are going to eviscerate him even more when he comes back.
And if he does, Vince is way too stubborn.
So here's my question, Mike. What would you do? Because I think you and I both agree on this, that WWE's wellness policy is not perfect. And I think it needs to be a little more strict. I don't know how you would feel, but I think both of us agree with each other when we both say that WWE's wellness policy and really wellness policies for pro wrestling is nowhere near as strict as the NFL, MLB, because like we said last week when we first talked about this, MLB, your first violation, half the season. Your second violation, an entire season. Third violation, you're banned from the sport.
I think what they mean by it's the most comprehensive policy is they test for a lot more things than either sport does. Like, NFL is still iffy about testing for HGH. And there's certain things baseball won't test for, like the players union won't allow.
But the question is, like, we get it. Professional wrestling, there is no off season. I mean, WrestleMania comes around. WrestleMania is their Super Bowl.
Yep.
But people are wrestling the night after that. So, I mean, we get that there's no off season, but I think wellness policies, at least punishments, 30-day suspension. If we're going to keep a 30-day suspension for your first violation, you go right back to the jobber squad. I think. I mean, you lose your place on the card. And you have to build your way back up again.
This would be the first time they've changed how they operate for a top guy. Randy Orton, they changed the rules of the wellness policy so that they didn't have to fire him.
Well, that's my point. Like, when the wellness policy is changed to just cater to popular talent, it's really not a really strong disciplinary policy.
The disciplinary part's not what's commended. It's the amount they test for is what's commended.
I mean, I think if you have a first violation, 30 days is fine, but you have to lose your place in a card because, like we said last week, Mike, if Roman Reigns is suspended for taking a supplement he shouldn't have been taking, and he's suspended for 30 days, and when he comes back, he's immediately in the main event picture again, meanwhile, Titus O'Neil is suspended for just simply grabbing Vince McMahon's arm, and he's suspended for an equal amount of days. That's not fair.
It's not, but again, you know how WWE operates with this stuff.
Well, that's why I'm trying to bring up this conversation here. if you can change anything about WWE's wellness policy, what would you do? I think WWE's wellness policy, if you get caught, you lose your place in the card, because fans, especially today's fans, we have really short attention spans. We all talked about CM Punk leaving UFC 2 years ago, and no one gave a shit until he finally got his fight date. Now we're all talking about him again, and we won't for a couple more weeks until the fight finally happens. So we have really short attention spans here in 2016.
We really do.
So that's why I'm saying you get suspended for 30 days without pay, which is what they have now, and then you lose your place in a card. You just do house shows. You do live events, and if you can still show that the fans still support you from coming back, then maybe you get brought back in a minor role on TV. You have to earn your place in the main event again, because WWE's talent pool is so massive right now. People are scratching and clawing for a spot on Monday Night Raw. Yep. That's why they're bringing SmackDown back, because they have so much talent to work with that they can't bring all the talent and give them all their one spot on just Raw. They need to bring them on SmackDown.
That live SmackDown is going to be fantastic.
It absolutely is. So if you can change anything about the wellness policy for pro wrestling, what would you do?
The consistency. Like they've got to be consistent with their punishments and not just change the rules to suit a top guy. That's what I would change with their wellness policy.
Yeah, if WWE can change main event matches and add people to the match, I mean, they changed the main event of WrestleMania 30 because the fans would not accept Randy Orton versus Batista. They just wouldn't accept it, and WWE reluctantly changed it, even though they didn't want to. They did because the fans wanted it. And now I think the WWE is starting to do what the fans want. So the fans don't want Roman Reigns, first off. We just don't want him. The fans know that Reigns took a supplement that he shouldn't have. So you lose your place in the card. You lose your spot on the show, because whether you can still participate in the ring or not, that TV time is the most crucial for WWE talent. So I think you should just lose your entire TV time and just work house shows. But I mean, I'm repeating myself now. Let's transition.
He's not even getting house shows though during these 30 days. He's getting nothing.
Oh, I know. I know. When he returns,
they replaced him on that Japanese tour for that world title match. So I mean, he's not making any money this month.
Oh no. I completely support that. I'm saying when he comes back, he only starts working house shows. And then if he shows that he's back to being a good worker, he's reliable, and he could still get reactions from the fans, then bring him back on TV. But he's got to earn his spot back. Not because if I'm a mid-carder or even a jobber in WWE and I'm obeying the rules and I'm doing everything I can, and all of a sudden Roman Reigns comes back after a month on vacation and he's in the main event again, I would be fucking pissed if I were a mid-card talent right now. I'd be livid.
Yeah. I mean, because of those mid-card guys would either be fired or, like, put all the way to the bottom of the barrel.
All right. Wow, we have the show gone already. So, let's transition quickly here. Top five stories, Mike. What is going on in the world of professional wrestling? What are our top five stories of the week?
Well, we actually breezed through a couple of them already. So, Bret Hart, actually, on his podcast, came to the defense of Curtis Axel and called out WWE's booking of him. So here's what he said on the booking of him. I wish they would do so much more with Axel. Kurt's kid, it's just a shame. On why he thinks WWE doesn't play off Curtis's legacy as perfect son. I've never understood it from the beginning. Even the name McGillicuddy or whatever that gimmick was. It just seems like almost impossible odds to turn that into any kind of successful storyline. What do you do with that? It never made a lot of sense to me. I think he's a really talented wrestler. I think he's got real talent. He's every bit the athlete and the performer that his dad was. I just always thought he was a little bit like Cody Rhodes, where it's like they never quite gave him the right things to book him to be the star that he was.
No, they just didn't. WWE dropped the ball with Curtis Axel. And
yes,
wasn't it when they debuted? I don't know how long ago he debuted, and that's what they did. They played off the fact that his father was Mr. Perfect, and he just didn't get over with the fans.
Well, they initially had him there as Michael McGillicuddy, and he was part of the New Nexus. Either the original or New Nexus. Then they brought him down to NXT for a bit, and then they rebranded him as Curtis Axel. And
right.
He was like the new Paul Heyman guy. So there was a Ring of Honor, the Best in the World pay-per-view this past weekend on Friday. And, I mean, there were some really good matches on there. I mean, Jay Lethal beat Jay Briscoe via pin. I think it was a clean pin, which I think they needed after the clusterfuck that was their last event, the ending for that had Adam Cole joining Bullet Club and interrupting the title match. Bobby Fish beat Dalton Castle to retain the TV title. I think he's due for a nice singles title reign. He's been there for a while. Even though I love Red Dragon, I think he should get a singles run. I think Kyle O'Reilly should get a little singles run for a bit. Kyle O'Reilly defeated Kamitachi via submission in a pretty good match. ACH beat Silas Young. Silas Young, if he weren't like the age he was, he'd be a great like Rick Rude type. He kind of channels Rick Rude quite a bit in his promos and look. Mark Briscoe defeated Roderick Strong via pin, which is what's being considered Roderick Strong's last Ring of Honor match. There's rumors that he's signing with NXT. There's also some rumors going around that TNA's making offers. So, I mean, he's going somewhere in Florida that's based in Florida, be it NXT or TNA. It's just not going to be Ring of Honor. Bullet Club, which is the Young Bucks and Adam Cole in Ring of Honor, defeated Moose and War Machine. Moose is another guy who's on the WWE radar. He's got the look, and he's improving in ring. That was actually a pretty good match, which should be expected considering it's got Cole, the Young Bucks, and an improving Moose and War Machine. The tag title match, The Addiction, which is Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian, beat the Motor City Machine Guns via pin. They've had the title for a while. I figured the Motor City Machine Guns were going to win that match. It was a letdown considering the teams that were involved with Chris Sabin and Alex Shelley versus Daniels and Kazarian. But again, with their body of work, not going to hold that one against them. Then they had the unsanctioned Fight Without Honor, which are always fun matches, which had BJ Whitmer defeating Steve Corino. Steve Corino, he's a commentator, but once every while he'll still lace up the boots and have a match. And that, like, it was a pretty solid overall pay-per-view. A couple matches that could have been better, like Bobby Fish and Dalton Castle, I thought was going to be a lot better than it was. But he had an awesome main event between Briscoe and Jay Lethal, who are two solid competitors, and how neither of them have been given offers to go to WWE, it's beyond me. Like, I just cannot fathom it. So, again, and Hammy, you should really start checking out Ring of Honor. You would not be disappointed.
I do watch Ring of Honor. I just haven't had a chance to watch this particular show yet.
All right.
What would you overall give the show?
I'd say 4 out of 5.
I mean, every single Ring of Honor pay-per-view I've ever seen has just been stellar top to bottom. I mean, they along with WWE, are the pinnacle of what I think is professional wrestling on a major scale.
Yeah.
WWE is more showmanship, and Ring of Honor is more focused on the actual in-ring competition. So there's just something for everyone. I haven't had a chance to watch Best in the World 2016 yet, but as soon as I have some free time, I will absolutely check it out. But if you're saying it's a B, I'm going to trust your judgment here.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it, especially for the title match, the Fight Without Honor, and then the six-man tag. And actually Mark Briscoe and Roderick Strong, too. Like, all really good matches.
What's next on the top stories?
We've actually gone through the top stories, so Now we got Raw to talk about.
Okay. Monday Night Raw. I thought it was a solid show. I thought it was, top to bottom, it was pretty enjoyable. I liked what I saw. I liked how, first off, they opened the show with Seth Rollins coming out and...
being Seth Rollins.
Being Seth Rollins. Yeah, I mean, I tried to think of a better metaphor for it, but Seth Rollins came out and was just amazing. He opened up the show addressing what everyone hoped they were. Because honestly, I don't know if we talked about it last week, Mike, but I honestly went into this episode of Raw not thinking WWE or anybody was going to talk about it on TV.
Yeah, I read the results before I watched Raw, and I read that he mentioned the reign suspension, and my jaw dropped because I thought they were going to keep that under wraps for as long as they could on air.
Well, even though WWE, I mean, you can watch the video podcast of last week's show, I pulled up WWE's official website where they said Roman Reigns was suspended. So, I mean, WWE clearly announced it. I just didn't think that because it's a PG TV. I didn't think they would actually talk about it. But then
I think they were going to not mention it on TV like they did with the CM Punk situation.
Okay, fair enough. But, man, Seth Rollins came out and this is what happened.
You know what? The hell with it. Let's talk about Roman Reigns. Let's talk about how the biggest mistake Roman Reigns ever made, the Roman Reigns scandal, embarrassed me. All right?
Brilliant, by the way, just to make it about him.
I brought Roman Reigns into the fold, and that mistake that he made that got him suspended, that embarrasses me. That soils my good name. No excuses, I own it. I
like how the woman said he's still hot. I didn't know my girlfriend was in Florida that night.
Own up after the fact. I get it. Like a real tough guy. Well, you can own it all you want, Roman, because the bottom line is I own you.
What a great heel. Seriously. Yeah. Him and Kevin Owens, best heels, Roman, in the company.
I owned you last year at WrestleMania. And I own you at Money in the Bank when I beat you in the center of this ring for the WWE Championship. And the more I think about it, Roman Reigns doesn't deserve a second chance. Roman Reigns doesn't deserve forgiveness. And most of all, Roman Reigns does not deserve to be in the main event at Battleground.
I really can't say anything much except agree with Seth Rollins there. I know he was doing his character. I don't think Roman Reigns does not deserve to be in the main event of Battleground. He was suspended. He got caught. He does not deserve this.
That was a great promo, and everyone agrees with that. Like everybody who's not a WWE official or worker agrees with that, and even some workers probably think that he shouldn't be in the main event, I'm guessing. That opening promo was pretty good from front to back.
That led to John Cena and AJ Styles coming out saying that they want to make the triple threat into a fatal four-way and then a fatal five-way. So the storyline of that was Cena and Styles had matches, and if they can win, they're in the match, and of course, both of them lost via outside interference via Cena and Styles in the other's respective matches, which continues the Cena-Styles rivalry. Can't complain about that.
And it makes the club look strong, too.
Yes, it does. The next...
Which, by the way, for those who think that AJ is going to get buried because of this, Vince McMahon, it's rumored, sees him as a top five guy.
Well, for those of you meaning me that think that, I'm being real animate here. AJ Styles will not be the same after he loses this feud with Cena.
I think they're going to carefully book him after the feud like they did with Kevin Owens. Like with his, they were going to make him some mid-card guy when they signed him, and then his reaction at the Royal Rumble plus his merch sales. They're seeing him as a top five guy. So they're going to be very careful with him.
I hope. So, The next bit of storyline continuation here. Well, it's actually going to be a conclusion because Chris Jericho on his highlight reel had Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens on his program. And what came of this is Owens and Zayn are going to finally finish it once and for all. I mean,
No, they're never going to finish that feud. That feud is just money every time. Maybe they'll stop wrestling each other for a while, but it's eventually going to happen again.
Well, yeah, I'm playing kayfabe here, Punchy. I'm going by the storyline.
I'm like the Kool-Aid man for the fourth wall. So.
The reason you didn't win the Royal Rumble match is because of me. And the reason you lost your Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania was because of me. And the reason you didn't win the Money in the Bank ladder match was because of me. So do yourself a favor. Do me a favor. Do everyone here a favor. And let's put an end to this once and for all at Battleground.
You stand there and you talk about how I ruined our friendship. You know who ruined our friendship? It was you. It's your fault. It is, because everything we've done since we've met was all to get to WWE, wasn't it? We fought together, we fought against each other, was always in the hopes of making it here. So when WWE came calling and you signed here a year and a half before I did, was I upset that you didn't wait for me? Was I upset that you made the right move for your career? No, I was happy for you, just like you should have been happy for me when I finally got to WWE and won the NXT title, but you weren't happy. No, you were furious, and why? Because my success came at your expense? What kind of friend does that make you, Sammy?
Wow.
I know Owens is the heel in this, but he actually kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
And I was always a better friend to you than you were to me.
Wow.
Wow.
So here we go. Owens and Zayn, if we're going by the storyline, for the very last time, but I know they're going to face each other off again at some point. Well, I think they're going to give this rivalry a rest, and then they're going to face off again at a later time.
Like they said in the indies, they're destined to just do this forever. And it's entertaining.
Channeling a Joker and Batman there?
Yeah. Well, no, they've actually said that in a promo. But that's the best rivalry WWE's going to have for years, is those two. It's going to be like Dean Ambrose versus Seth Rollins and any other great rivalry. Because it kind of, you feel for both wrestlers. You feel for both characters that they're presenting. And they hit you on an emotional way. And everything they do just clicks. It's just the right mixture. And it's two guys who are familiar with each other who can make that work.
And the final part, because we have less than 8 minutes here before we have to sign off, my personal favorite of the night. The New Day mocking the Wyatt family with their video intros. Instead of a lantern, it's unicorn horns. Oh, can the New Day not get any better? So the New Day channeled their inner D-Generation X and came out to mock the Wyatt family. Xavier Woods looking like Eddie from Tekken. Big E looking like Hillbilly Jim. And Kofi Kingston looking like someone from The Purge. So... this rivalry is just, it's going to blow up when they finally face off at Battleground. I can't wait for this. They have great chemistry together, and I look forward to what is going to be revealed every time Xavier Woods gets spooked out by Bray Wyatt, because this is now the second week in a row that Woods has been speechless and kind of like, I don't want to do this. This is the second week in a row that he's done this, so... What's happening with Xavier Woods? I can't wait to find out. And I really hope it's not the breakup of the New Day. I don't want the New Day to break up. They deserve to be the face of the tag team division. And I really hope Xavier Woods is not like going to pull Daniel Bryan and like join the Wyatt family or something.
No, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's just kind of them trolling the Wyatt family.
Here's a little bit of Bray Wyatt's response.
And of course, all praise be to the power of positivity. The masses, they line up for you like ravenous dogs because you tell them everything that they want to hear. But that's the problem, yeah? Bray Wyatt's sole purpose on this earth is to tell you everything you need to hear. The world is not made up of rainbows and unicorns, nah. This is a cruel world, and it is full of dangerous people, yeah. So go ahead, New Day, please. Remind me of how the power of positivity can help a man that just lost his job. Please, New Day, remind me of how the power of positivity can help him to put food on the table for his starving children.
Hey, me on Facebook, relax. Bray Wyatt channeling me right there. I didn't realize I was in Tampa with a wig on, but...
No, if he were channeling you on Facebook, he'd be saying, why are you concerned for animals when you're not concerned for people getting killed? Angry face emoji, angry face emoji, angry face emoji.
Oh my god. So, like, again, this rivalry is sure to be one of the best things coming out of Battleground, I hope. We have a couple of weeks left until Battleground, and I just hope that the Wyatt family and the New Day continue to give us amazing content until then.
We got Battleground and then the draft.
Yep. I can't wait for that. Going to be a great week for WWE listeners. Listeners. Here are our two question/talking points of the week. Could we say that?
Yeah. Now, speaking of the draft, now they've actually officially renamed their main championship the WWE Championship.
Again. Yeah, you notice that too. They didn't call the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. They just called it "He's a WWE Champion," which leads us to our question of the week: should there be two major world titles in WWE with the brand split?
I think so. It gives a more opportunity for guys on the roster. So, like, there's a logjam in the main event scene that gives an extra title for someone to win and an extra title for people to be feuding for.
I agree. I think SmackDown should have the world championship and Raw should have the WWE championship. Or we could see Dean Ambrose drafted to SmackDown and they bring back the World Heavyweight Championship on Raw like they did in the early 2000s with Triple H. So
I think what they'll do is they'll keep Ambrose on Raw. I think Ambrose, Rollins, and Reigns will all be on Raw.
I think so, too. I think Cena and Styles go to SmackDown.
Yeah. And I think Cena's 16th title win is going to be the World Heavyweight Championship. And then I think Styles actually wins that one, too, eventually.
And so we're both in agreement here. Should there be two major world titles? Yes.
Yes.
There should be.
The other question is we've been ripping TNA a new one the last couple weeks. So the question,
deservedly so, by the way. Let's make this very clear. Deservedly so.
Yeah. The only thing we praised on TNA was a wrestler making fun of something that we ripped TNA for.
The only thing we praised is a parody of a crappy promo.
So the question, in one sentence, how can you fix TNA?
Well, I know two words to describe TNA. Kobayashi Maru. TNA is the no-win scenario in the world of pro wrestling. I think...
So basically, if you cheat by hacking their computers, you'll win.
Precisely. So, I mean, Slammiversary is like their SummerSlam, okay? Or their WrestleMania. Slammiversary is one of their two biggest shows of the year, and it almost didn't go on the air because they didn't pay the bills. Taz left because he wasn't getting paid on time. Other talent has left because they haven't been paid on time. They've now one of the new minority owners of the company is Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins. I mean, Dixie Carter has Vince Russo'd this entire company to the ground. So in one sentence, how do you fix TNA? Get rid of Dixie Carter.
In one sentence, how do you fix TNA? For me, it's hashtag hammy logic.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, hammy logic would work perfectly. Purge it, burn it to the ground, and make it rise again from the ashes.
Yep.
That is how we fix TNA, which is, right now, it seems to be unfixable.
Yeah, no, it's too tarnished at this point.
All right, and that is our show for tonight. I want to thank Punchy for Skyping in. It has been fantastic. Solid show tonight, Punchy. Not going to lie here. I liked it. The podcast will be up within minutes because that's what we do here at Brain Stew Wrestling. We get the podcast up as soon as we're done with the show. Audio podcast should be up within a few minutes. The video podcast will be released tomorrow at 6 a.m. He is at Hipster Punchy on Twitter. I am at Hams Gruber on Twitter. Thanks a lot for listening and watching, guys. Have a good night, and we will see you next Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on BrainStewRadio.com.